Hi, I'm Joe Quirk. I talk to Seasteaders and their supporters. Jose Cordero is a world citizen and a tireless traveler who he seems to live and work on every continent at once. You're best known as an economist, but it also seems like you've achieved in every field, from mechanical engineering to languages, to technological foresight. Jose is advisor to some of the most important companies in the world. He's authored several books. His first book was a bestseller that is now taught in over 100 universities. So Jose Cordero's resume is longer than I can list. So let's just say he's a very smart guy with overachiever issues. He even finds time to visit his mother. How is your visit to your mother in Venezuela, Jose?
Very nice, Joe. Happy to talk to you and happy to be here now with my mother in Venezuela for 1 week before traveling again.
All right, well, thanks for taking time away from her to talk to us. So here's my chance to test the seasteading hypothesis with a real expert, and I have no idea what you're going to say. So the seasteading contention is that the singularity, which you speak about, is taking off in technology, but it's being held back by politics and crusty old rule systems produced by obsolete governments are holding it back, and we need new experiments in governance to unleash this distributed discovery process that we think discovers solutions. So believing this allows me to make an audacious prediction about the future. So I want you to bear with me. I'm going to be Quirkstradamus, and I'm going to make a prediction. So imagine we have a seastead up and running. And floating in 2020, and it only serves as a fishing village. And within 2 years, well over 500,000 people move there. And then within 6 years, the seastead's industrial output increases over a thousandfold, and it draws poor people from all over the world. Within 20 years, the population increases 23 times, and over 30 years, the population grows from 30,000 to 10 million, which causes property values to ascend 18,000%. Most people, when I talk about seasteading, say, list all the disasters that could happen. And what I just described sounds like a starry-eyed idealist scenario, but I just described what actually happened in the coastal village of Shenzhen. China declared it a new special economic zone, and there was just spectacular wealth created that created tens of thousands of jobs. I call it a humanitarian singularity. So for me, this is just something I've read about. I'm not an economist and I've never been there. You are an economist, you have been there. What was your impression when you went?
Joe. Actually, I have been in Shenzhen a couple of times. The first time, 25 years ago, in 1989, and I was kind of surprised by a small city because it was maybe 1 million people at the time. That is again a quarter of a century ago. But I was there now again a couple of weeks ago, and the city has grown to about 15 million people today. And that is an incredible, astonishing growth. I repeat, from maybe around 1 million people to close to 15 million people today. And it was a poor fishing village in front of Hong Kong at the time. And today it's a city which is bigger than Hong Kong. Okay, so it is possible to change very quickly, very fast, and the creation of the special economic zone of Shenzhen created incredible wealth and incredible companies in that city. Many of the largest Chinese companies today are based in Shenzhen. I'll name one that many people should know. For example, Huawei. Huawei is one of the largest manufacturing of telephones in China. It's like maybe Apple in the USA in a way, or BYD, which is a car a company that wants to be the Chinese Tesla, for example, or Tencent, which is in a way similar to a social network. Think of Facebook in China. So all these companies are in Shenzhen, and they didn't exist a quarter of a century ago. And there is so incredible wealth today that actually Shenzhen is one of the wealthiest places in China today.
And it turned around. I mean, it's only been since 1979 that this special economic zone was created. Can you tell us what a special economic zone is?
Well, the idea at the time with Deng Xiaoping, who was the Chinese leader that began opening the Chinese economy, was to create a few special economic zones that would allow free markets and free people to move and start companies and start anything. So they had a special economic zone status, as it clearly says, that people could do basically anything. And as you mentioned, this began in 1979. When it was there 10 years later, 1989, it was already growing very fast because it was a fishing village when Deng Xiaoping created this status. And the reason why he chose that place is because it is in front of Hong Kong. That was the only advantage it had. It was just across the border from Hong Kong in mainland China. And today, I repeat, it is hard to say, but many people estimate the city has about 15 million people. And if you go there, it is really free markets in economic terms, all these big companies, people can change jobs very quickly, can find jobs very quickly, can create companies very quickly. And it's really extraordinary what has happened in a few years.
If you look at like the graphs of the population growth, it just looks like a stampede of people that shows no sign of pausing. I think it's going to keep getting larger. And I refer to this as a humanitarian singularity. But a lot of people that call themselves humanitarians say there's a lot of unfair worker practices in Shenzhen, that the workers are exploited and they don't have safe living conditions. What's the proper response to that kind of criticism?
Well, the people have chosen to move there on their own. I mean, no one has pushed them, no one has forced them, no one has told them that they have to go and work in Shenzhen. So, from that point of view, it was the people's choice, and they decided that they can live better in Shenzhen than in their original places, in their original homes. But I do want to say something. Obviously, China is a huge country. China is close to 1.4 billion people. So obviously, there are a lot of people, and China is going through a large migration from rural areas to cities. And the same will happen actually in India and in other parts of the world, mostly also Africa, that has many countries with small city populations, but large countryside populations. So people say that this cannot be copied or replicated in other places. And I believe it can, because again, we are still migrating from the countryside to the cities. In fact, the population of the planet is just above half a city people and have people in the countryside. So it's about 50-50 today. So there is still a lot of people, millions and millions of people moving to new places, to new cities. One of those new cities could be a seastead. It could be a new place floating around the seas.
The guys interested in helping us with our floating city project, DeltaSync, they're in Holland. They talk about how the whole world is moving to the coasts, and the world is moving to cities, and most of the mega cities are expanding on the coasts, and sea levels are rising, and that we kind of have no choice but to start floating. And what excites seasteaders about examples like Shenzhen and Hong Kong, and even Singapore and the African island of Mauritius is one of my favorites, is the idea that when you experiment again, when you start over with new rule sets, you can create tremendous prosperity for the poor. I'm wondering, like, what would happen if special economic zones proliferated all over the world? Would they work everywhere they're instituted, or is there something particular about Asian countries that allows this to happen?
Well, this is an excellent question. And the impact on the poor, I think, is so important because, as we have discussed in Shenzhen, most of the people who migrated to Shenzhen were poor people. Okay. And they made the free choice that instead of being in their poor original homes, in probably in the countryside, somewhere in the fields of China, they decided, even though they were poor, to move to Shenzhen and start a new life in a new city with incredible opportunities. So I believe this could be replicated around the planet because, again, we have maybe 3.5 billion people living in the countryside that will be moving anyway to cities throughout the next few years. So they might as well move to good cities where they have free markets, where they have new opportunities, because they are going to move anyway. So it is possible. We are talking about 3.5 billion people moving. I mean, this is incredible. A lot of people. So there is opportunity for a lot of floating cities.
Yeah, people are voting with their feet, and they used to say between East Germany and West Germany, the guns were only pointed in one direction. And what I say is between, old China and special economic zones, the people are all walking in one direction. So it's up to them to choose these places. And is it fair for seasteaders to cite places like Shenzhen and say, we can create hundreds and thousands of these on the ocean that will be better government experiments than the ones that exist now?
Well, like every example, it has some drawbacks as well. In the case of Shenzhen, it was a government experiment. Okay, so it was the Chinese government who created this special economic zone. So, from that point of view, it's not an example to seasteaders because there is no world government, and we do not want a world government, I hope. So, there is no global leadership that will say, okay, let's create a couple of seasteads in the Pacific or in the Caribbean or in the Indian Ocean. So, we do not have that leadership. So, it will be actually more free markets taking this decision and more free people taking this decision. But from the point of view of the economic growth, incredible economic growth and wealth creation that has happened in Shenzhen, we can see that an economic zone can give those results. Therefore, we need actually more free markets instead of more governments leading these new cities. Because there is still plenty of space around the planet, as you know. Maybe 70% of the surface of the planet is the oceans. So we have a lot of space to move and to colonize just in our planet without thinking about other planets later on.
Yes, I mean, a lot of people talk about, experiments on seasteads could lead to spacesteading. And I know you've put a lot of thought into that. I mean, I just think about seasteads as the next step in governance. I don't think there's ever been an opportunity for entrepreneurs to basically start their own countries. I think this is very exciting. But a lot of people who think really long term, like you, think this is a stepping stone to going to space. Do you think you could explain some of that?
Well, I would love to, and also put this in the context of a human evolution. Sapiens left the African continent where we all evolved. Humans evolved in Africa, and then we moved from Africa to other continents. Thanks to these adventurous ancestors who began going to other continents. We are here now in North America, South America, Australia, Asia, even Europe, because humans only evolved in Africa. So from that point of view, humans are very curious. Humans like to colonize, to explore, to discover. So now that we have basically gone throughout all the continents, we have still a lot of space on water, right? On the seas, on the oceans. And beyond that, we have space. Space is so huge. It's so big. It is actually hard to think about how large is the space, maybe infinite, certainly compared to the size of our small planet. And so I believe we will do this eventually, and eventually soon. In fact, there are quite a few space missions in the next 10 to 20 years, both government missions and private missions. For example, NASA has some plans to finally, in the next 15 years, go to Mars with a space base to put on Mars. The same, the European Union, Russia, China, also private companies like SpaceX. Elon Musk, actually, he's just talking about sending a human, a million humans to Mars. And not just sending, people will actually want to go to Mars. A million people is not that much if we think that we are over 7 billion people here on Earth. So he's talking about, well, why don't we send people, begin sending people to Mars? Or actually, people should begin to decide if they want to go to another planet to colonize it, to conquer it, to explore, to discover, like our ancestors did when they left the African continent. So my view is that in the next 10 to 20 years, we will finally begin the human colonization of space, beginning with a base on Mars.
What excites me about frontiers from here on out, as opposed to the many of the frontiers that came before us, at least, after the Agricultural Revolution, is that previous nations were founded mostly by conquerors, and that future nations will be founded by creators. So, a lot of libertarians are attracted to seasteading because they say seasteads will be the first nations that won't aggress against any existing people. That's also true of space, as far as we know. And environmentalists are very attracted to seasteading because they talk about on the deep oceans, it's such a desert of an ecosystem that building new cities won't aggress on any particular ecosystem. The chance to found new societies peacefully, without having to conquer and kill people who already live there, is pretty exciting to me. I talked to Zachary Caceres in depth, staying up late at night, and he's the head of the Startup Cities Institute. And we got into a really discussion about which is the bigger challenge, creating startup cities within existing governments, or going out on the sea and getting the engineering challenges of starting over. Has there ever been a precedent for a city or a new city-state being created just by an entrepreneur rather than a general?
Well, that's a good question. I do not know that I know the answer, but certainly, I mean, entrepreneurs or discoverers, even the pilgrims that left Europe to begin the USA, they were in a way entrepreneurs. So I think, yeah, it's part of human nature. We like to discover. We like to create new things. So I think it is possible. But the fact that I want to emphasize again is that it's still about half of the human population is moving anyway. I mean, 3.5 billion people are moving from the countryside eventually into cities. So this is happening no matter what in the next few decades. So they will move to new cities on land, or if there are better alternatives in the seas and maybe in space, they will move into the seas and into space. So we have to think about this because it will happen anyway. Mass migration, human mass migration will continue very fast.
Yeah, I mean, there's 1 billion people stuck in dysfunctional governments. A lot of them want to move, and I guess we should do our best to, create better places where they can move. I think of current nations, many of them are basically like gated communities, locking out the 700 million people who say they want to leave their countries and find a better place. And I'm hoping startup cities and seasteads will welcome them with blue-green jobs.
That's right. But then these new cities, these new states will have to be in a way multicultural, just like the USA or other countries in the Americas, that open their borders to people from many nationalities. You know, the USA is truly a melting pot. So we have all these hundreds of millions of people moving, but they come from many different places. We have millions moving in China, millions moving in India, millions moving in African countries, millions moving in other parts of the world. So these will be truly multicultural cities. And again, that could be very positive. There are many studies that show that the more diversity, the more intercultural diversity that you have, the better the prospects for economic growth and idea generation.
Is it really that simple that, you know, we were talking about Shenzhen and Hong Kong, and it seems simply that the Chinese government just sort of withdrew a whole lot of its controls of these places and prosperity blossomed. And that makes people like you and me say, aha, the more free markets there are, the more societies blossom. Is it really that simple? Is it the more governments kind of back off from micromanaging people's lives, the more they naturally become wealthier? Or is it a lot more complicated than that?
Well, there are many factors obviously involved. One of them actually is that people who migrate normally are more entrepreneurial. They are risk takers. So this is an important factor. But since we're talking again about Shenzhen, let me tell you something which I believe is really interesting. Because Shenzhen is a city of immigrants within China itself. Even though it is in Guangdong, Guangdong is a very populous state in southern China, southeast China, where the normal language is Cantonese in the Guangdong province state. But because Shenzhen is a city of immigrants, and actually many people do not come from Guangdong, then the language of Shenzhen, the main language, is Mandarin, which Mandarin is the national language, even though Shenzhen is in Guangdong. Just like Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, the main language is Cantonese, not Mandarin. So I found that truly, truly interesting that you can see it written and spoken. Most people in Shenzhen use Mandarin, which is the national level language, even though it is in a Cantonese-speaking region in China.
So if you get off the plane in Hong Kong or Shenzhen, you know, what makes the largest impression on you that makes it so different from other places in the world? Like, what was your experience?
Well, as I said, I know some Chinese, and when I noticed that really they were speaking Mandarin and not Cantonese, that was very impacting to me, to tell you the truth. The other thing is how, you know, is trying to do new things and to do more, even though they might be poor or they might come from any corner of China. So it is a very diverse place, much more so than, you know, Hong Kong, because Hong Kong had a long time to evolve compared to Shenzhen. Hong Kong also has a lot of immigration, obviously, from many parts of China, but Cantonese was always the main language. And because immigrants came slowly, there was time for them to learn Cantonese, not in Shenzhen. So those are a couple of the things that I noticed from the cultural point of view, that it is a very intercultural Chinese city. It's not like the capital of Guangdong, that is called Guangzhou, which is very Cantonese, or even Hong Kong, which is still very Cantonese. Anyway, also, China is growing so fast. Imagine a city that went from 1 million people a quarter of a century ago to 15 million people today, has incredible growth in every sense. And you see that, for example, in the number of high buildings, high rises everywhere. Some of the tallest skyscrapers in China have been built recently in Shenzhen.
Now, a lot of people complain about the environment, that the problem is that the, you know, environment is being destroyed and despoiled by all these people developing this, as if to imply it shouldn't happen. You know, is that a legitimate criticism of this rapid growth?
Well, I think people want to live in a good environment. So once they reach a certain standard of living, they certainly worry more and more about the environment. Actually, you might remember Abraham Maslow and his pyramid of human necessities, the hierarchy of human necessities. So basically, number one at the bottom is survival. And then at the top are more transcendental things like care for other people, for the environment, and so on and so forth. So while people were poor, actually, I can tell you, most of the people that came from poor areas in Shenzhen, they lived probably in much worse conditions than they live today in Shenzhen. So from the environmental point of view, I would also argue that they live better today than before.
Yes, I've heard that argument before, and someone showed me an astonishing Kuznets curve. I think it was on that something called Papblog, PAP blog, which, by someone named Sagnioli, I think. And it shows this graph that in general, as countries increase their GDP, their environment gets better. So basically, the environment keeps getting worse as people go from $100 per capita GDP up to about $10,000 yearly per capita GDP. And right about $10,000 is when the environment starts to improve, and that this is something they were able to trace among multiple societies. So it seems like people clean up as they're growing really fast. They destroy their environments, much like Europe did and the United States in the Industrial Revolution. And now that some of the China and places like that are playing catch up. On that way up, during the rapid growth, they do a lot of destruction to their environment, and then over time, as you say, they move up Maslow's hierarchy of needs and start to worry about birds and fish and trees, and people's priorities change. I'll have to, look that up and get more details on it, but I found that very fascinating. I've always been. It's amazing every time I hear about Jose Cordero, it's like you're in a different country, you're in a different continent. Why do you travel so much?
Well, I consider myself a world citizen, and actually, I want to see as much of the world as soon as possible. And then I do want to go into the oceans myself more and more, and then into space. Let me tell you, I have been to 135 countries. And I know that there are more people who have been to more countries than me, because there are about 200 countries, plus or minus, depending on how you count them. But I have never met one myself physically that has been to more than 135 countries. And actually, I have been many times in most of these countries, not just once. So I love traveling. This is part of my mission in life, to see the whole planet and the whole universe. So I am truly a discoverer myself. I like to keep on meeting people, learning new things, discovering new things. It's part of my lifestyle.
And what's next for you? Your life seems so unpredictable.
I could say so exciting. Next week, for example, I am going to Korea, South Korea, for about the 50th time. I have been many, many, many times also to South Korea, and only once to North Korea. Well, from there I go to Mexico, and I keep on traveling. Every year I go normally to about 20, 25 countries. And all these ideas about technologies and economy and the relationship between economics and technology, because indeed I am an economist and I am also an engineer. So I like to combine these two things, economics and technology.
You must just have an amazing perspective on, what causes societies to flourish and what causes them to stagnate. And I wonder if you could, because you combine the academic and the business with the personally going there and experiencing it. And I wonder if you could sum up what your general take is on why societies prosper.
Well, I do believe strongly in liberty. And the freer you are, the more liberty you have, the more choices you have, and therefore the more possibilities in the future. And this is becoming more and more important because things are changing faster and faster today. That is why centrally planned economies cannot compete with free markets. They could not compete in the past, and they will not be able to compete in the future, actually, much less. So this I have discovered through also all these trips, even in countries like North Korea or Myanmar or Cuba. You see, people want to be entrepreneurs if they are given the choice. So that is why I am so optimistic also about the future of humanity. People like to learn, people like to discover, people like to try new things. And therefore, I also believe that if seasteads develop soon and space seasteads also in the following decades, humanity will spread throughout the oceans and throughout the universe.
Jose Cordero, thanks for being an inspiration to us. And if people listening at home want to check out something you've written, I mean, you've written such a variety of papers and books. What would you recommend first?
Well, I'm working a lot on transhumanist ideas lately. I mean, lately for the last 20 years. So I believe that is part of the future of humanity. We are going to transcend our human limitations. We are going to continue evolving, but now evolving not only biologically, but also technologically. And this will actually create an explosion of opportunities. We are going to see like a Cambrian explosion of everything in the next few years. So I am truly excited and happy. And if people Google my name or go to my website, which is mylastname.org, which is cordeiro.org, you can see some of my writings and some of the things I believe in and some of the things that I work on for a better humanity, for a better future.
And the way to pronounce your name, I can't pronounce it. Jose Luis Cordero, or.
Yes, actually, yeah, my name is probably Portuguese. My last name probably Portuguese, but my family is from Spain, and I was born and grew up in Latin America, and then I studied in the USA and in France. So people pronounce my name in different ways, but the way I pronounce it myself is Cordeiro. But
Cordero.
Cordeiro, yeah. But I take any good approximation of my name.
So please check him out. His writings are very mind expanding and very optimistic, and you gave a amazing TED talk. You covered a lot of ground in a short period of time. I recommend that too. And thanks for talking to our seasteading fans, and look forward to talking to you again next time you're at Singularity University.
Absolutely, Joe. A pleasure to talk to you and to all your friends that believe in seasteading and soon space steading.
All right. Thank you very much, Jose.
Okay, bye
All
bye.
right. Bye-bye.